and all to the Dual Wielding Game of the Year 2014, way deep into 2015 edition. Joining me this week, we have our award-winning panel, Jason.
Hello.
Anthony.
I have 15 amiibos, damn it!
Before you can buy it, Anthony.
Martin.
Hello.
And Daniel.
Greetings.
So just, and this is, I believe, our fifth Game of the Year show. So just kind of as a quick recap, if you've never been here for one or whatever, how this breaks down is that we have about 20 categories, I guess. Most of these have been pre-selected by us via email and all those fancy means of technology. We'll read off our nominees and then talk about our overall winner for that category. And then there are about 3 or 4 awards that haven't been pre-selected because we do actually want to talk it through to come up with a winner. And of course, that is the biggest one is our Game of the Year pick. So to kick it off, I guess we're going to go with best and worst characters. For best characters, we had John Irons, Bayonetta, Captain Toad,
yes,
and Pagan Min. And the winner for that was Bayonetta.
Of course, because you can't have Bayonetta not win when she gets her game released
ass.
In a year.
As far as a video game character, just having fun with being, well, whatever she is, an uber witch, an umbrid witch, whatever. Bayonetta is just a really fascinating character who's kind of, I think she breaks the mold for video game characters just because she seems to enjoy what she does, and she's not one of those people who has pains killing people or feels bad. She just enjoys being over the top and silly and goofy, and she enjoys Christmas because you can't have Christmas without caviar.
She's a sexualized, violent, mature rated character from Nintendo, or published by Nintendo.
Yeah, I was about to say, from Sega. Well, technically from Platinum Games, who just happened to whore around whoever publishes their games.
And that's the thing, is I think that even if you don't think that Bayonetta is the best character, you're not wrong, because, you are. If you do have problems with the way that she's sexualized, then that's fine, but at least you're talking about it, and it means that, there's some interesting conversation, even if you hate her. Instead of, that's just a character in a game, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a good choice. I didn't vote for her, but I think she's a worthy choice.
She is Bayonetta. And she has a song about her, too, which is really awesome, because I love when it kicks in during battle. Worst character. Oddly enough, Bayonetta also had a section in this, which is Silky, which I completely understand. Brother of the Queen, and our winner, Aiden Pierce from Watch Dogs.
I have not played Watch Dogs, otherwise I might have voted for him as well from what I heard, but mine was Loki, so...
I actually hadn't played Watch Dogs either, but I think people have talked about it on the show, and just based on that, I had to vote for him, because it sounds like he has the same problem I have with Kratos, in that almost everything that happened in the game is his fault, and his fault alone.
Yep.
And I always think that's a terrible character trait when you want it to be your hero.
Exactly what happens is sister says, please stop being a vigilante because you're putting me and my family in danger. So he continues to be a vigilante and she gets kidnapped because of it.
Yeah, it's the same.
Surprise.
Yeah, it's the same thing that happens with Kratos, where everything happens because he just can't stop himself.
And also, otherwise, Aiden, in every video and thing I saw from the game, he just looks like a really bland and uninteresting character.
Yeah.
Even when he's wearing the iconic cap?
and mouth scarf?
Yeah, both things totally make the character. Remember, Earl, what people say, what the worst thing is about wrestlers is when only thing you can say about them is their physical appearance?
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing with Aiden Pierce.
This one was an interesting one, I think, because it wasn't a huge year. And I think our winner, I'm kind of curious to see your thoughts on this. Best franchise survival of 2014. Our choices were Geometry Wars 3, Oddworld, and the winner, Bayonetta 2.
I feel like Wasteland got gypped.
Well, because nobody played it apart from you.
I was going to say, you didn't even, you nominated.
I didn't have that on my list, that option that you just sent me.
It's on your option. It's the third one there.
Is it? Whatever, but, it's still Wasteland 2, because Bayonetta was not dead for long enough to be an extra revival.
You know, I'm willing to agree on Bayonetta, because it was looking like we were never going to get a Bayonetta game again until Nintendo just surprised us with it.
Yeah, that's why I went with Bayonetta, because it was really a franchise that, from all we've heard, was dead. It's an actual revival, and that Nintendo took a project that was canned by Sega and brought it back to life. And it turned out to be an amazing game at that. But, yeah, I agree with Martin as well, because it's only been about 4 years in between Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2.
Has it really been that short? Because if that's the case, then that's 6 years between Smash Brothers.
But Smash Brothers,
Wasteland has been dead for over 20 years!
I get that, but I think Bayonetta was a literal revival, and that's why it counted, not necessarily.
Yeah, and it's uncharacteristic of Nintendo as well to do something like that. For something like Bayonetta as well.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of curious to see the reaction to this, because it is a game that has really, it's a relatively short time from game to game. It's about closer to 5 years, I guess, because it came out at the tail end of 2014, and Bayonetta came out at the start of 2010, but in real-world times, it's been a really short time for technically speaking, at this point, Metroid's in the same boat, and that's not considered dead. Anyhow.
My gut reaction is like, oh, that's way too short, but then I voted for Geometry Wars, which also hasn't been gone for that long.
Yeah, I think it's honestly because nobody cares about Geometry Wars past 1. I didn't know, because there's like 2 and there's Galaxies and there's, or it's Galaxies 2.
2 is
no,
the best 2 one.
And, yeah, 2 is the best one.
Okay.
It's just a shame that Activision never ported it to anything.
Yeah, okay. So this is both a good and bad award. Traditionally, we used to have an award called the Best Game That Got You Fired. And there was no game that really got anybody fired this past year, or at least any that was worth talking about, which is a good thing. On the flip side, we ended up with the other problem in the game industry, so we have the most broken game of 2014, or this year. And the nominees for that were Assassin's Creed Unity, Sonic Boom, and the easiest winner of the year, Halo: The Master Chief Collection. And
because it still doesn't work properly.
Yes, I was about to say, we're in January, we're 2 months out from launch, and the game still does not work as intended. And the best part about it is that brokenness carried over to the Halo 5 beta, because you couldn't get into a game, and I stopped playing that after a while. I didn't even know it ended yesterday, which is disappointing. Any disagreements?
Nope.
Okay, no disagreements. So, now it's up for... I guess since we're doing broken games, we might as well do games together. What was your most disappointing game of 2014? And this is an individual pick, so...
Disappointing or worst game of the year?
Huh?
Disappointing or worst?
Disappointing. Game. Disappointing, because I think disappointing and surprising are two different things that aren't necessarily a mark of quality, which is why we don't do it as a, okay, this is what we pick as a winner. It's just kind of like a game you had high expectations for that didn't live up for it. And I'm going to go in order for my screen show. So, Anthony, you're up first.
Disappointing game of 2014?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember what I put down there. Do you have that on the list? And I'll explain it. If I don't have anything there,
and
the reason for it is that I do, I enjoyed playing through the campaigns, of course, and the presentation stuff was great. The disappointing part was that the online was so broken. I mean, for the most part, I'm doing enough research to know that to look at games and just to see if if it's not something I'd be interested in just from reviews. I still need to go through more of Hyrule Warriors. The critics for Hyrule Warriors kind of lowered my expectations of it. I'm enjoying it so far, so it hasn't been disappointing. But definitely the online component of Master Chief Collection has been disappointing, which is kind of why I'm sticking with Halo Reach for my Halo fix right now.
Okay. And I mean, I'm just going to cheat because it's also my most disappointing game, but I'm not going to beat up on its online because I think we've kind of been through that enough, and we've been through my fun experience with the Xbox One and getting this game to work. I'm just going to touch on something that I also think needs to be addressed. It has a terrible UI. Like, it is the laziest UI I've ever seen in the game. It's really like, okay, just put these things up and just have them move left and right and we'll call it a day. And it's just like, this is your A brand. This is your franchise. This is the franchise from Microsoft. And you make it like it's something you put together overnight and just throw it out there. Like, it's this collection, and it has so many great features that I would love to play if I ever got the chance to. And you just kind of hide it all behind this terrible UI where nothing makes sense.
Are you talking about, like, the menu interface?
Yeah, like, the whole, like, how you pick the games, how you pick, like, you know, like, how they have, like, the, I don't know what they call it in-game, but there's, like, the part where you can kind of go through different chapters from each game bundled together.
Right. What I did like about the menu, though, was it was just a small touch. I know what you mean, but just the small touch that I did enjoy is that when you're hovering over a game, it goes to music from that game.
That could work, but everything else for it is pretty terrible.
Yeah.
And just kind of to extend that, I understand it's a whole system-wide thing. I also hate how they kind of set up party chat now on Xbox One with that. And it seems to be it's not uniform. Like Titanfall, that the party chat, you can do it from in-game. You can just press, I think, F-trigger and it'll pull it up. Master Chief Collection, Halo 5 Beta don't have that, so you have to go through the Xbox One UI. And again, I get that that was designed around Kinect, but that's no longer a mandatory thing for a lot of people. So they do really need to work on having some, because you can't, like, in the Xbox 360, you tap the home button and you could do it. Here, you have to go through a bunch of different menus and stuff like that to get it working. But yes, Halo Master Chief Collection was my most disappointing game of 2014. Martin.
So, for me, my thing is kind of weird, because it's probably the game I've played most this year. I think you already know what it is. And I really enjoyed it, but there are also a lot of things that could be better. It could have had more content. They could have done the progression differently. They could have done the loot differently. All the stuff which holds this game back, and basically this could have been Game of the Year, but it isn't, and it's a shame, and that game is Destiny.
Yeah, Destiny's a funny one, because I've heard a lot of people kind of describe it as, like, I enjoy it, but, and there's usually a plethora of reasons, but the core is that people enjoy the game, they just kind of wish it was more fleshed out.
Yeah, the basic gameplay is just so good that it's a shame that there are so many problems.
Yeah, which is kind of why I put it, because, like, it'd be nice if I could say, oh, well, Destiny's most disappointing because it never came to a PC, but I just don't want to play it anymore, like, because, you know, they're getting off content with DLC, and the DLC is expensive, not that, like, doesn't add that much, and there's not that much story to begin with, and it's just a shame to see things that, maybe things that Bungie weren't the best at anyway, but they've only gotten worse, you know? And they're a company that has a history of not really learning from their mistakes, and this is just kind of, you know, exemplifies that.
So far this category has been Bungie and Bungie's baby.
I mean, for me, I didn't pick Destiny, but I definitely agree with you guys that it easily could have been one of my most disappointing games. And I think particularly, like, in the story side, where they just... I mean, the other things were imperfect. The story was just, for all the pomp and circumstance, not even there.
No.
So what was your pick, or are you going with Destiny now?
Well, no, I'm still going to stick with my original pick, which was... Civilization Beyond Earth.
That's also a good one, yeah.
Yeah, and not that it's a terrible game, but it just, you know, I was really excited about, I played a lot of Civ 5, and I was really excited about the prospect of Civ 5 in space, right? Two things I love, Civ 5 and sci-fi. But, like, it turned out, and we've talked about this on the past episode, like, without that historical context kind of driving the tech upgrade system, it just, I mean, it just loses all of its, like, intrigue. Like, I know the importance of, you know, creating agriculture or creating the internet, but it's hard to wrap your mind around all these various, like, sci-fi-y things that don't really mean anything to you. And there's not a clear, like, the upgrade web was a cool idea to give you more freedom, but it also makes it feel like there's not a clear sense of progression, and I don't know, it just kind of ended up being kind of meh on the game.
For me, it's disappointing in a different way. It's just that it's no Alpha Centauri. Alpha Centauri was a way better game, and this just felt like Civ 5 as a reskin, but actually even more stripped down.
Okay. Next up is Best Soundtrack, and I don't like this answer at all, but whatever. Nominees were Transistor, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, Shovel Knight, and our quote-unquote winner, Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U.
Yay!
Seriously?
Of course!
I disagree with that as well.
Well, you're wrong.
I understand why Fu will for it, but I think it's nominating a Best of Album for best album of the year. Like, yes, it's amazing songs from a bunch of different games, but it has no original song.
The thing is, for me, I don't think this year I had any memorable soundtracks. It's the only soundtrack I could remember, so I automatically nominated it.
Did you not play Transistor?
I have played Transistor. I couldn't tell you anything about the soundtrack.
Have you not played Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze?
No, I haven't played it because Donkey Kong is trash.
such a terrible mouth. But yes,
three of those. Like the Donkey Kong Country, Tropical Freeze, David Wise, amazing soundtrack. Shovel Knight, awesome as well. Best original soundtrack, I would pick one of those. But I mean, Smash Brothers brought some new stuff, new arrangements to the classic stuff, and then the theme song was also really good.
It's so, I mean, it's okay. Like, one, I don't know if any other game can compete with 400 tracks. Like,
well,
400
that's why
tracks
it's a clear winner, then, right?
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
It's just cheating because it's got the best of everything in it.
I know.
It's a pretty easy choice.
It's not like you will have a Smash Bros. Every year, so whatever.
I'd like to honorable mention Forza Horizon 2, which I've been playing a lot since I turned in my picks, and the soundtrack in this game is also amazing.
But it's no Smash Brothers, apparently, so whatever. Best voice actor, and this is pretty much just Kevin Spacey across the board. Well, not across the board, but it's 31 people nominated. And his work in Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. I honestly think it was just not a great year for story-driven games.
Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to voice work to really kind of gravitate towards. So,
well, I mean, yeah. Like, give him... He did a great job in that game. You know, we like to make fun of Call of Duty all the time for good reason, but his character in that game was awesome. I mean, it's pretty much the exact same as his character in House of Cards, but still awesome.
It's a pretty good character, though.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very interesting character, and you can tell he's really into it. Like, it's really well acted, so.
Okay.
He's really good at playing that slimy evil guy.
Yeah.
It's just really weird because he was in Superman Returns and he did not play actually with it that well. I think because
it seemed like that Lex Luthor, although I have to say the characterization was all over the place.
Yeah, they wanted him to kind of play the Gene Hackman, Larger Than Life, Goofies. Yeah. Anyhow. The Know Your North Lifetime Achievement Award of being in every video game in 2014, aka the new Troy Baker Awards. And I think there was no real selection for this, I just kind of went with Lego Batman 3 Beyond Gotham, just because I do find it ironic that he's been in so many games now that he already gets to play the Joker, Batman, and Two-Face in three different Batman products. And, I mean, if you want it to be fair, he gets to play the Joker and Batman in the same year because he was the Joker in Batman Assault on Arkham, and then he was Batman 2 months later.
Yeah, it's getting crazy, and I hope we'll see much more of this.
Oh, I didn't even know he was a voice in Titanfall. I wonder if he's one of the...
I don't think it's going to be better this year. I think he's still in a bunch of games to come.
No.
Yeah, now him and Troy Baker are both major characters.
You mean him?
Started four.
Yeah?
Yeah, but him and Troy Baker... Yeah, but Nolan North and Troy Baker are in The Last of Us anyway.
Yeah, but
it won't be the first
Nolan North's character in Last of Us isn't a major character. He's a supporting character.
Yeah, I think it's because they're brothers in this game, which I guess had to happen eventually that they'd be related.
So Troy Baker this year will be in, let's see, he will be in Metal Gear Solid 5. He will be in Uncharted 4. He's in Saints Row Get Out of Hell. He's in Batman Arkham Knight.
I'm sure he's probably going to be in The Division at some point just because.
Sure, it's Ubisoft's game.
So yes, I'm sure we'll get plenty of Troy Baker in 2015. Okay, so yes, Martin had a disagreement with this, and usually this is kind of an odd one, but this year it actually kind of worked out well. So we're going to do most innovative game of 2014, and then best game mechanic of 2014, which for once was really separated from a lot of people.
Did we vote? Never mind. Continue.
So most innovative game, we have Transistor, Shovel Knight, Telsigrade?
Telsigrade.
And Shadow of... There we go. And Shadow of Mordor. The winner is Transistor. Jason, you had that. You want to talk about it?
Sure. I mean, Transistor was just... It had a lot of mechanics that were kind of customizable or tailorable to how you wanted to play. So, excuse me, its entire skill system was the main reason I nominated it. I mean, you basically apply any skill you pick up to one of three ways to use it, I guess, so to speak. So you could have it be one of your actual attacks, you could have it augment other attacks, or you could have it be a passive buff. And so by switching out and combining all your different skills, I mean, there's just a crazy number of combinations of abilities and things you can equip with your character. And on top of that, probably not completely original, but the way it blended with everything, it's like optional real-time combat or real-time or turn-based combat system. You can play it both ways. You can play hybrid. It kind of reminded me of the VAT system from Fallout, but in an isometric game and without, like, targeting individual body parts and stuff. And then on top of all the mechanical stuff, just the kind of the world itself, the visuals, all of that, unlike any other game I've ever played, and very beautiful.
I would also say, and I thought this was rather interesting, that almost all of our nominees were from indie games this year, and I think Shadow of Mordor was the only one that was a AAA release.
That's typically where the innovation happens, right? Because they're...
Well, I think in years previous, we at least had nominees from the AAA space, and I do think it kind of speaks to the year that was for the retail titles where indies were kind of doing their thing.
And it's pretty obvious from our podcast that Shadow of Mordor kind of is the only AAA title that stood out to us.
Which is why I find it funny, because the next category is best mechanic, and I don't think it's any surprise if you listen to this show, but it's the Nemesis system from Shadow of Mordor, because I think everyone who's played it really enjoyed that system, and I would really love to see it come back in Batman games, or any type of, they could have, Crackdown could actually do something like this, because Crackdown's one of those games that has, like, that huge organized crime set. Well, he's Crackdown 1, I've never played Crackdown 2.
But there's still room to improvement for the system as well, so that alone has me very excited that this kind of system can come back, and it can get even better, potentially.
Yeah, the first iteration of it, of course it can get better, and it just created such a, you know, it gave life to the kind of what would otherwise be a mundane kind of gameplay system if you just had these predetermined orcs and stuff, and it gives meaning to your dying, and you know, it's definitely something any open world game could definitely take advantage of.
Since there was a disconnect between our most innovative and best mechanic, I would also say that as much as I'm enjoying Shadow of Mordor, outside of the Nemesis system, it's a really kind of safe game.
Well, that's why, there's the split, because I think Transistor is innovative in a lot of aspects, whereas Shadow of Mordor was innovative at that one mechanic. The rest of it, it liberally borrows from other games and does it very well.
Yeah,
but it's not
original. It's a fun game, but it's pretty much Batman, the Arkham franchise, with a Shadow of Mordor skin and this great Nemesis system that kind of differentiates it.
And Assassin's Creed just kind of traversal and stuff.
Still, if you borrow mechanics, you still have to do it well. And we have seen time and time again people, for example, that try to copy the Batman combat and just fail miserably.
Right.
Yes, I've shared my love with that Ninja Turtles game that released a couple years ago that tried that and failed miserably. Just really quickly, since we went to Nemesis right away, the other one was Threes, and I want to give an honorable mention to the Bravely Default system, which allows you to kind of control how you handled battles in an RPG. I don't know if other RPGs do it, but I do like the fact that, like, oh, your own health, you can turn off all
battles. I feel like I've played some JRPGs that had somewhat similar mechanics. Of course, not quite as extreme as Bravely Default, but there have been games where specific characters had something like that. But yeah, I would still agree that it's pretty good. A pretty good system that they have.
Yes. Okay, which means it's time for one of our fantastic breaks. And since we already did Most Disappointed, we might as well continue the trend. What was the worst game of 2014?
Sonic Boom.
Sonic Boom.
Sonic Boom.
Okay, I think that's a short discussion. I mean, there were broken games, and then there was Sonic Boom. Like, Halo eventually may work. Sonic Boom is still a terrible game.
Well, this is the thing, is Sonic Boom is so broken that not even the cutscenes work properly. So, here we go.
And on top of that, even if it would work right, it just isn't a good game at all.
Yeah. And I think Big Red Button was closed on after it, and we didn't want to talk about them because they made a terrible game, and they deserve stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Sonic Boom.
I read a couple of days or a week ago, I think, it got like a 1 GB patch, and people haven't really noticed much that got fixed. Except the infinite jump.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's the only thing I heard got fixed, was the fact that you can pretty much skip the entire game and finish it in like 20 minutes with an infinite jump gear. And that's what they focus on fixing. Not the bad game. Oh, they're taking too short to get through this game. Stop them. Okay, this one is always sometimes really difficult and sometimes really easy. But best subtitle? The nominee we had was So Suspect, and I think the far away best winner of this category was Super Ultra Dead Rising 3 Arcade Remix Hyper Edition EX Plus Alpha.
Oh, I forgot that came out this year.
Yeah,
that's
a great title.
To that. there's no other choice.
Yep.
It's not even ironic. The thing is, I thought about it, and I was like, see, it's not even ironic, because the whole point of the DLC is to just sort of take the piss out of Capcom things, so you know, and that's what they do in the title. So it's long, it's unwieldy, it's stupid, but that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, best subtitle of all time, I would say.
I honestly don't even know how the game turned out. I just
who cares.
But yes, it's, again, I just want to say it one more time. Super Ultra Dead Rising 3 Arcade Remix Hyper Edition EX Plus Alpha. So, yes.
It's so good.
best writing. Nominees were Call of Duty Advanced Warfare.
Ooh. Sorry, but it might be the best Call of Duty writing, but that is not good writing.
It's such a low bar. You could.
I think it's going to say a lot about our nominees this year.
Well,
I actually the Talia's Principal, Shovel Knight, and Wasteland 2 were our nominees. And honestly, it was kind of a four-way split. I didn't play any games with the story, so I kind of recused myself.
Yeah, and I haven't played any of the others, so...
I'll cop to the one who nominated Call of Duty, because I was trying to think of what else I played this year. And I was like, Shadow of Mordor,
it's not going to be Call of Duty.
Huh?
It's not going to be Call of Duty.
No, that's fine. I was just saying, like, it was like, for me, it was the least of all the evils kind of choice.
That's the worst thing you could say right now. Shut up.
I was going to nominate Bayonetta 2 just to piss off Martin, but I figured nobody would actually buy that as a category.
All the good story games got delayed.
No, you haven't played them. Talos Principle and Wasteland 2, both are fantastic, right? And I actually played both.
That is true. I haven't played either of those games yet. So
basically, this will be about how much I can convince Daniel that my choice is the right one.
Let's put it this way. I don't play CRPGs, right? So yeah. I don't know how much you're going to have to convince me. I might just let you have it because... I can't be bothered to argue, because...
then sure, we'll go at Wasteland 2. Then.
Yes! No, it is fantastic. It is fantastically written, though. It has
lots
of interesting character. The story is cool. There are interesting choices you can have, unlike other RPGs these days. And you can actually have fun exploring the world and exploring side cons, because all of it is interesting, and you meet interesting, and you get into interesting situations, and you get into stories that even other RPGs might not even touch. So I think it's just very, very well written, and it absolutely deserves to be in this category and possibly win it.
Okay, so that brings us to Best Boss Fight, which was an odd one for winner, but we'll get to that in a second. The nominees were King Dodonga from Hyrule Warriors, Chef from South Park The Stick of Truth, and then Bayonetta 2. Like, everybody just said Bayonetta 2.
I said one of those Bayonetta 2 big dragon things.
I didn't play Bayonetta 2, but I can imagine that...
You literally just kind of pick any boss
except the final one.
I guess this is our game of the year. We might as well talk about it. I was still disappointed because it's one of those games where everything keeps building and building and building, and then the final boss is like the most disappointing fight in the game. And then partially because you've had that same fight three times already. Yeah. And the first time you fight him, or the second time when you fight him on like the giant fiery things with like the two giant beasts in the background fighting as you.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was amazing. That should have been the final boss fight. Or when you're in your giant titan and you're fighting stuff. Bayonetta 2.
In the first level, the huge dragon thing you fight while it's destroying the city.
Yes. So, I think at this point, it's. I guess this year would be different. I don't think there's any Platinum game announced for this year, so.
Scalebound this year.
It wasn't advertising anyway,
so nobody will buy it.
Well, I mean, that's the same thing that happened with Bayonetta 2, but I was going to say, the only thing we've seen of it was a CG trailer at E3 last year, and this is Microsoft's. I'm not expecting it before 2016. We shall see. I haven't even looked at these, so I don't know. Best Box Art. The nominees were Bound by Fame, Just Dance 2015.
Worst Box Art.
Worst Box Art.
Not best. Definitely not best.
And Duck Dynasty.
See, I don't know, I don't know.
Bound I nominated Fame, Duck Dynasty because it's incredibly lazy. It's like brown wood background and someone just slapped the cropped out faces on it.
Right. Yeah, but if you look at Just Dance 2015, right, look at... Oh, hang on. There was one that I saw, and it was the worst thing. Yeah, it's just 2015, like the Xbox 360 version. You can't read any of the writing on that, because there's so many colours everywhere, and I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's also
oh
terrible.
My god.
I just thought mine is lazier.
Yeah, somebody put effort into making that box art, that Just Dance 2015 box art. They put effort into it, and it's still terrible.
True.
And Bound by Fame just looks generic.
Yeah.
That's true.
So,
it's a shame we didn't have a Batman game come out this year, because we're going to give them the Game of the Year.
I know,
we didn't have...
I don't even know if we had a big Game of the Year award this year. Like, a game, you know, like, everything else is Definitive Edition. It wasn't some hyper Game of the Year, two thumbs up, way, way up edition. So that
we will get that next year, I think.
Yeah, Arkham Knight Game of the Year edition is going to have the worst box art for 2015, 2016.
Arkham Trilogy.
So what does win?
Just Dance. I'm changing my vote.
Yeah, it's just going.
Most people say it's Just Dance. Okay, I'm fine with that. They're all terrible.
Just Dance.
Okay, congratulations, that's you fine. All win worst box art.
Yes, I mean, that's true. But, okay, now for some positive talking before we get to a negative one again. Biggest surprise of 2015, 2014 even. I'll start off because I assume we all kind of have a similar one. Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah, that was
didn't
mine.
Didn't expect anything from it.
Actually, you know what? I'm willing to secede on mine and agree with you on that one because I didn't.
Oh, well, I mean, it's an individual pick. It's not a. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, Shadow of Mordor. It was just kind of a game that. I mean, it's from the same. It's from Warner Brothers, so it kind of makes sense. It's the same thing that we went through with Arkham Asylum, where I had no expectations for this game. It comes out, and it kind of changes the landscape with one or two things, in this case, the Nemesis system. But even then, it's just a really fun game. Like, I haven't made a ton of progress, but I just love going through all these random side missions. I think because it's kind of all tied into this weird central story that I enjoy doing the side quests. Like, you know, even killing orcs, you free saves, and that opens up new missions. Or, you know, like rescuing people and stuff like that. There's just a ton of little side missions that do build to this world's narrative where it's kind of being oppressed by orcs and you're just kind of this dark, shadowy figure who's trying to help out in the background. So everything you do does have a purpose, which a lot of open world games don't tend to have.
For me, the most surprising thing about it was actually more that it actually worked as advertised because... Mm-hmm. Every time I saw it before it was released, and every time I heard about the Nemesis, I thought, like, this is not going to work in the final game, is it? Because we have heard shit like that time and time again. And usually it turns out somewhat terrible, or not working at all. And this time it actually delivered what was promised, and that was my surprising moment with that game.
Okay. Anybody, Anthony?
Yeah, my surprise, I mean, the surprise of the announcement, was Captain Toad having its own game, which was, I've been really enjoying it, but there's so much hype around it that by the time I got it, I kind of knew what I was in for. But Shovel Knight, when that came out, it was just sudden. I mean, by the time I knew about it, I wasn't really following. By the time I knew about it, it was already out. A lot of good recommendations, bought it, absolutely loved it, recommended it to a few people. I mean, it is what everyone says it is. It's an NES-style game that advanced in a way that it would if the NES had better hardware. It wasn't just a copy of what that stuff was, but it made it into something that was really great by today's standards. Great feeling controls, great combat, great music presentation. It was a big surprise. It was one of my favorite games of the year.
Yeah, that was completely true, especially being that it used that pixel art style, which has kind of become similar for, okay, we're just not going to try. We're just going to make this really crappy animated 8-bit game that we're going to say is retro, which was fun at first, and then everybody else is doing it. It became lazy and cheap. Martin?
Mine is more like, holy fuck, this is a game that actually exists, and it's this War of Mine, just because... Someone made a game about surviving in a war zone, and it's actually not about soldiers, but about the civilians and how they have to deal with this situation. I think that's an interesting choice for a game, and they actually also made it an interesting game, and not just one that is about storytelling, but also as is interesting on a mechanical level, and that's why this was a surprise for me.
Okay, Jason?
Mine was also Shadow of Mordor. I actually like the Arkham Asylum analogy a lot. I think that kind of... But at least, like, back when Arkham Asylum came out, you know, I would say more invested in Batman than I am with Lord of the Rings. So, you know, the build-up to the game, it's gotten decent buzz at trade shows and stuff, but I kind of ignored it. I was like, oh, it's just, you know, Warner Brothers is doing some basically faceless Lord of the Rings license game. I'm sure it'll be okay, you know. And then it came out, and everyone who was playing it couldn't stop talking about it. And, like, the reviews were just through the roof, and just I ended up picking it up, and just like you, Earl, I mean, it was just so much fun to play. And it took, like, the best things I love from Arkham, the best things I love from Assassin's Creed, kind of threw in this, like, Lord of the Rings, like, paint, and it was like, just enough to make it, like, a really interesting, really memorable game. I just honestly didn't expect to like it that much. That was the biggest reason. It was a surprise. I was going to skip it. It was on my, you know, list of things I didn't feel like I needed to play this year. And instead, it's one of my favorite games that I did play.
Daniel?
Mine would be Microsoft buying Mojang, because those two companies were just, like, completely diametrically opposed.
That's a good one.
You know, Microsoft is a big behemoth that just throws money at a problem to solve it, and Mojang's a company, a small sort of underdog company that just made a thing that resonated with everybody, you know, that basically everybody that plays it really likes Minecraft, you know, and then Microsoft just goes, that's mine now, thanks, $2.5 billion. You know?
Oh, I was just saying, it's not like that. It was a lot of money and a lot of effort, apparently. Which actually also rolls into our next category, which is biggest news story of 2014. And one of the nominees was Microsoft by Mojang.
Mojang.
And the other one, which is really kind of the winner, was Gamergate, which we've done our best to avoid talking about since it's happened on this show for good reason. And I think we should continue that legacy and just say it one.
You know,
and move on.
I'm just going to say, it's sad that it's the biggest news. I hate that there's still reason to talk about it because some assholes are still keeping that thing alive.
You know what? I just didn't think about it because, as far as I'm concerned, people that play video games being complete fucking dicks is not news to me. But the less I said about that, the better.
Yeah,
I don't have anything to add other than, you know, like Daniel said, it's unfortunately, taken more generally, it's not a new thing with this hobby, which is kind of a bummer. And it escalated to a point where it's beyond anything we've seen before, I guess. You know, it's more violent and hateful and being covered by mainstream news outlets, but it's just, ugh.
Yeah. This is also a new one, even though I'm pretty sure we can have this every year. I don't know how we worded this, but it's basically the game of the year of 2014 that was pushed back in 2015, which is basically any game that got delayed into 2015. Just real quick, even though we have our winner, just gonna run off the nominees because there were, you know, there's official ones. Evolve, Batman Arkham Knight, Battlefield Hardline, The Order 1886, Quantum Break, Tom Clancy's The Division, Dying Light, and of course our winner, The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt.
Oh, Witcher, how I miss thee.
Especially being that it seemed fake for a while, people were okay with it because Dragon Age Inquisition came out and people were really with it, and it seems like there were people who were with it for a while, and then they just kind of realized it was the same thing over and over again and stopped. So, I feel like that might
it's,
have...
It's, for me, it's mostly... I talked about this before. I enjoy meaningful side content in my RPGs, and that's not something that Dragon Age Inquisition delivers. Wasted 2 did, but I still think Witcher 2 did it so far the best in the sense of having meaningful stuff to do as side content and the world actually reacting to the things you do. And that's why Witcher 3 is so exciting to me, because it seems like they will take this just even further.
You know, every time I see a video of The Witcher 3, I just think, why would anyone bother making a fantasy game after this game comes out? What's the point?
I just hope we can, after that game comes out, we can say the same thing about Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was actually going to pick up Dragon Age Inquisition because I wanted, like, I've never played a Witcher game, but it looks so good that I do want to try it out. But I'm like, I want to pick up something to hold me over until it comes out. But I believe Microsoft is giving out The Witcher 2 free
this
month.
They are?
Yeah. The 360 version actually really good. I played that as well.
Actually, I think that should be up now, so I'm going to look into that after we finish recording.
Yes, you should.
So, that brings us to our Game of the Year. I guess I missed any awards, which I don't think. And just to kind of get the ball rolling, we're just going to go around the table and have everybody name their Game of the Year before we determine what's actually going to be the Game of the Year. And we're going to do it in order of my screen. So, Anthony, you're up first.
Sure. Probably not a surprise, but my pick is Super Smash Bros. For Wii U. Primarily because, for me, just on a personal level, the Smash Bros. That I've had in the past, I haven't really had, surprisingly, an amount of people around me that enjoy playing it. But now I have
and
two.
And now you have
that,
15 plastic statues to enjoy with you. Sorry.
Jason, that hurts. Come on. No, I walk into it.
But it's true.
But I live with it. I live with two other guys, and they both love playing. And we've been getting a kick out of doing all the events, all the unlockables, getting the custom parts. We actually do use a lot of the amiibo to create an amiibo army of like 3v3 with us versus them. Having each of us training an amiibo and seeing which one's the best out of them. But also the online is leaps and bounds over Brawl. Hardly play Brawls online, but playing a lot of online Smash here. Great connection, very little lag in a tournament right now with some IGN fans of Nintendo. The one-on-ones are great. We do a lot of 2v2 online. It's been a while since I've had a game that I've come back to and played most days. So Smash Brothers is my pick just for the sheer amount of content and just for how much fun it is. And that's not even diving into 8-player Smash and just how accessible it is for anyone that wants to jump in.
Okay. Martin?
For me, it was between two games. And before I nailed down my list, it was like changing on a weekly basis. So I'm first going to say Wasteland 2 was on there, but that's not my number 2. My number 1 is Shadow of Mordor. I talked about not liking the story very much because it's kind of generic, but I'm usually not one that plays around a lot in the open world, in these open world games, but the Nemesis system made me, and I wanted to play around with these orcs, orc war sheets. I wanted to see what I could do to play around with this system and see where I can take these different orcs and do different stuff with them. And on top of that, I'm also love stealth games, so approaching these camps stealthily and effectively was also just a ton of fun because they give you a bunch of cool abilities to deal with the orcs, and especially like the one where you can teleport to a guy that you shot an arrow at and then basically decapitate him. That's just super cool and stuff like that. Yeah, so Shadow of Mordor for me.
Okay, Jason.
I was also going back and forth between two games, and funny enough, Shadow of Mordor is the one that ended up being my number 2. But the one I settled with, when I was thinking about it, I think Shadow of Mordor was, you know, mechanically really solid, and like you, the story was kind of lackluster. So for me, the most complete package of a game that all of its different aspects left the biggest impression with me this year was Transistor. And I mean, we already talked about, like, the mechanics, so you can customize your abilities and all that stuff. And really, too, it was just, like, it was so beautiful. Like, I found myself pausing every few minutes, you know, taking a screenshot, just enjoying the art, enjoying the music. I played it on PS4, and I really liked the way they used the DualShock 4's speaker to be, like, the sword that the main character holds talks to Red, the main character, throughout the game. And if you're playing on PS4, the sword talks to you through the speaker, and the light on the DualShock 4 glows just as the sword glows on the screen. And it's a really small thing, but I think a really cool use of, like, what for pretty much every other game is just a, you know, throwaway kind of feature. And that these little touches on top of what was just a magnificent game. I mean, that was the whole package for me.
Okay, Daniel?
I picked Shovel Knight because although I've only played it briefly, I think that it just sort of celebrates everything that's right about games, as well as sort of, because it's a bit of history, and it's a bit of modern mechanics, and it's a bit of old school mechanics, and the music's really cool, and, you know, it has a nice art style to it, and it manages to just sort of do the whole retro graphics thing right, which I don't think anybody else has managed to do, apart from maybe Retro City Rampage. So,
I was also going to say Mega Man 9 and 10, but yeah, those are kind of different.
So I think that, you know, I picked Shovel Knight for those reasons. And, like, who needs to say that the game with the biggest budget in the world needs to be Game of the Year, you know? Like, it's just a bunch of people that really like games decided to put a bunch of stuff that they really liked into their game, you know. And, you know, I can't pick fault with it. There's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with that game at all.
Okay. Which comes to me, and not necessarily fighting between two games, but it was one of the few years where I was kind of split on what I expected from my game of the year. Because to me, the best game I played this year, as far as, like, controls and level design and music, was Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. But the game that I had the most fun with, the game that I've kind of wanted to go back to, like, every time I'm not playing it, and I've mentioned this on the show before, was Hyrule Warriors. So ultimately, I went with the game that just kind of left the impression on me that I need to play this game all the time when I'm not playing it.
Mm.
And I'm still not entirely sure why. I just find it extremely addictive and fun and enjoyable and colorful, and there's just so much to do. Like, there's a lot of games I play and I finish and I don't go back to because I kind of beat the story mode. Where Hyrule Warriors is like, yeah, I beat the story mode, but that's just the beginning. I have to go through adventure mode. I have to unlock all these characters. I have to get their best weapons. I have to unlock all the suit for them. And it's just, like, it has good music because it's a Zelda game. It doesn't have great music like you would expect from a Zelda game. It doesn't have any great story. I don't even know what the story is. There's a magic witch who somehow spits off, and the good witch goes with ink, and the bad witch wants his dick. that's what I got generally from the story. I'm not 100% sure if that's accurate or not. But, yeah, I ultimately had to go with Hyrule Warriors just because it's the one game that I've constantly went back to throughout the year. And especially being that it wasn't a game I expected anything from. I bought it on a buy two get one free sale because I needed an extra game and it was something I wanted to check out. And I think of the three games I bought during that sale, it was the one I paid the most, partially because one of them Taylor Master Chief Collection, and I can't actually play that. But yes, Hyrule Warriors. So as far as I can tell, we have Smash Bros. Wii U, Transistor, Shadow of Mordor, Shovel Knight, and Hyrule Warriors as our Game of the Year contenders. Mm. Are there any that we want to knock off right off the back?
Transistor. I absolutely didn't like Transistor, so
he's going at me with an axe.
Well, if I will say this. I mean, we're going to have to consolidate picks. And like I said, Shadow of Mordor was my number two, so I don't have too much problem throwing my weight behind him in that game. So we can do that.
So, Shin Sister, and you also wanted Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah, I can't vouch for it being a game of the year.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't. I wanted to go with Donkey Kong because I think that's a much stronger contender, mm-hmm. but ultimately I had to go with my that was the
oh,
one
yeah,
that
for sure.
I thought was Hyrule Warriors. So that is us with Shovel Knight, Shadow of Mordor, and Smash Brothers Wii U. Which I honestly think are all three evil choices because I have them all for different reasons.
Short break. Earl, you are getting yeah. Oh, you were way too low.
Oh, is this
yeah.
better?
Yeah.
Okay. I had to move because the damn dog. So, yes, okay. So, Shadow of Mordor, Smash Brothers, Shovel Knight. Who wants to make a case for or against any of these three games?
For against, it's real difficult for me to make one for against any of these because I really like all of them, to be honest.
I
have to say, Shovel Knight is not on my top 10, so I guess I would be against that one?
Shovel Knight's the only one I didn't play, so I guess I'm against that one too.
I would say, if we're going that way, I would be against Shadow of Mordor because it didn't make my top 7, and that was partially because I didn't pay enough in 2014 to kind of get a pitch for it. I've paid more since the new year. And as much as I like Shadow of Mordor, I think part of it as the Nemesis system is great and stuff, but it does kind of get repetitious at times.
Wait, you can count what you've played this year for last year's.
Oh, yeah, I am counting that, okay. But I'm just saying that like, based on what I've played, like Shadow of Mordor, I would, like, it's fun and it has a great system, but it does kind of get, and I hate the ghouls. I honestly hate the ghouls. And that really is a part of the game that I really dislike.
It's a very small part of
just, the game. It's a small part, which is why of the three games, that would be the one I would knock off if I had to pick for petty reasons.
Well, I would say the game that I was willing to be number two for me, if I can't say Shovel Knight, would be Shadow of Mordor, because
yes.
Despite the fact that it owes a lot of its DNA to a lot of things, the Nemesis system is kind of one of those things where you go, oh yeah, but wouldn't it be cool if like the orcs got stronger as you like they killed you and stuff, and it's not only is it like a cool idea like if you were to say it to somebody in a quick discussion, but it turns out that it's a cool idea if you actually put it in a game and it seems to work in the context yeah. that it was done.
That's the other thing you just mentioned as well. Like Transistor, one thing I did like about Transistor, Shadow of Mordor also made death an interesting part of the game. Which most games don't do.
Yeah. You die, you go back to the checkpoint. Whereas Shadow of Mordor, like, actually makes a thing happen if you die, and it makes it matter as well.
Yeah, it's true. Really
in some cases where you want to die because you want somebody who you've got on your side to go up the chain, or, you know, you don't want to die because it's going to make somebody that much stronger and you really don't want that to happen, you know.
Yeah, but at the same time, I feel like that's something that Shovel Knight's actually pretty good at as well, in a different way. Though it combines a lot of stuff we've seen in other games. The fact that you can use checkpoints as a reward or risk system, where it's like you can get to a checkpoint and you can keep that as a checkpoint,
but
or you can break it for more.
That doesn't make death an interesting mechanic. It's just
anecdotal example for Shadow of Mordor, right? So there's, you know, whatever procedurally generated orc shows up, and he kills me the first time. So a little bit later in the game, maybe a couple war chiefs, or not war chiefs, whatever, generals later, I go back to him, and you know, it marks that he's killed me before, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to get my revenge. He kills me again. And this happens a couple of times. Now he's so strong that I can't kill him, so now I'm avoiding him when I'm doing my missions on my map. And then eventually you get to a point later in the game where he actually takes over as one of the war chiefs, and then you have to kill all the war chiefs. So now the other four war chiefs, he's the last one left, and it's like all built up to this climactic battle where I'm going to make it to the next part of the game by defeating this random orc who's now become my ultimate rival because he's killed me like 4 times. And all of this happened organically within the game system. Like, that orc doesn't even exist for anybody else. But yeah, he was there in my game and he was a big part of my game. And that was really cool.
And this is it. It's a cool sort of... It generates a lot of water cooler moments. And it's an interesting sort of mechanic that sparks emergent gameplay like that. You know, you've got a story because a guy killed you twice, you know, and the game made it so that him actually killing you actually meant something, not only to you, but to the character and to the rest of the game.
And not okay, to take anything away from Shovel Knight, I think it's a fantastic game, but it's mostly just very well executed, right? And that sense is similar to Shadow of Mordor. So I think Shadow of Mordor delivered more new stuff than Shovel Knight actually did.
Okay, then we're bumping off Shovel Knight, even though I'm personally disappointed in that, which leaves us with Shadow of Mordor and Smash Brothers, which is an odd game to compare.
Well, we have probably more people supporting Shadow of Mordor than Smash Bros., so that should be easy.
It's a good thing we have 5 people today. No more ties like that one year.
No more ties. I don't know if Shadow of Mordor and Smash Brothers would have even counted as a tie. But I guess to kind of make a case for Smash Brothers where it isn't just a slam dunk for Shadow of Mordor. One, I do think that the game's added a ton of great content. I haven't played it yet. Daypair mode just seems like a really fun... Okay, I haven't played it with actual people. Like Anthony, I've played it with my other toys. Which I do think is a fun addition, even if it's not necessarily needed or changes the game in any facet. But, you know, if you have, like, 7 people, you want an 8th, you can just throw in your toys, which do learn and grow with you, which is fun. A ton of stages. We've already mentioned the music. I honestly think the online is improved. Not great. It's still really, really misses the ball with that.
Is that the online at that point, or your personal internet connection?
Nah, the online was also spotty for me, to be honest.
Okay.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
I've only
played
like
3
matches, and like 2 of them were mine.
One-on-one is usually fine, but everything beyond that is a crapshoot.
That's you should. I'm looking at Team Smash as well because you're still just looking at 2 systems connecting instead of 4. So,
well, if you're playing with the same people, if you're playing with 2 people on the same system, and like your friend, I mean, it's very difficult to compare the 2 games because Shadow of Mordor is a single-player story-driven game, and Smash Brothers is really a game that's dependent on your experience with other people. I don't think, like, if you expect to play Smash Brothers on your own, there's enough content to justify a single-player mode. Like, I don't like what they did with the classic mode, where now you just kind of move across the board and you randomly bump into people and engage in some fights like that. But as far as being a multiplayer game, I think there was probably none better this past year. And I think they've added a ton of, you know, unique modes and weapons and stages and characters. I think they dug deep into the Nintendo history. I do, you know, like, you can't really predict anything on the DLC, but I do think that even having it connect with the 3DS version in some capacity, just, you know, being able to use it as a controller or being able to own that content when you have both is great. You know, we gave a soundtrack of the year, even though I disagree with that. 400 songs is nothing to scoff at. It is the closest thing we get to an encyclopedia of video games as far as having a vast knowledge of a history of an industry, of a franchise, of a company in this case. I think, you know, adding stuff like Mega Man and Pac-Man helps as well. But ultimately, I do think it's hard to compare. And I guess we're going to have to go with Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah. I mean, I also like Smash a lot, but...
Yeah, I mean, we're picking between a lot of good games here, but...
Yeah, I think, you know, like we say, it wasn't a great year for games, but I do think at the top, there were some really good ones, it's just that everything else was.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing. The top was really good, but the rest was kind of just, eh!
Well, I think it's also... and we've kind of talked about this before, I'm not sure if it was on air or off air, but, like, we felt like there were a lot of games that they were like, oh yeah, that'll make my top 7 list this year.
Yeah.
But none of us were very strong about like, oh yeah, that one's definitely my number 1. Like, that's my standout, you know, for the year. And it's kind of weird that way.
And I think that's true of even this, because Martin had it as his number one, you had it as your number two, Daniel had it on his list. It didn't make Myers for the end of the year. But overall it's kind of I don't want to downplay it because it is our game of the year. But kind of going back to our Game of the Generation podcast where Uncharted 2 just kept on appearing on this, because everybody had it. Not number one, but everybody had it because it was a great game. It just wasn't a memorable game for anybody. But Shadow of Mordor, I think, is a great game. It's just not the best game of the year. Well, I guess it is now. it was just a really weak year overall for AAA releases.
Like, I think if you stacked up Shadow of Mordor to the top two games of the last three or four years, it wouldn't be very high on that list.
Yeah,
The mechanic alone, Nemesis thing alone, would probably put it on a lot of top 10 lists, but it definitely would not be number one in a lot of other years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also think that as cool as the Nemesis system is, I think that's also one of the things that can be dated really quickly.
Well, yeah, people borrow it and improve upon it.
Yeah, we will see that, I guess.
I would just say this much before as we begin to wrap up and kind of call it a close on our 2014 year in gaming. I forgot if we did this last year as well, but it's really weird that we had no kind of graphic awards this year. And I honestly don't think anything stood out that way to me.
Transistor
looks beautiful. I agree there with Transistor.
Well, I mean, in years past, we used to have a graphics award. We had a technical award, and then we had an art style award. And I think that was part of the reason we did away with it, was because we had two of them. But it also didn't feel like we were cheating anything by not having it this year. I didn't notice until we were just talking about it, because the Nemesis system would be the first thing that aged. But graphics tend to be the thing that ages fastest for a lot of games.
Yeah. Call of Duty Advanced Warfare looked surprisingly really good.
On a technical level, yes.
Yeah, on a technical level, we're talking about. And Forza 2 also.
Dragon Age also
really impressed me. But
Dragon Age looks also really good on a technical level, I think.
Yeah, I mean, technically speaking, from a technical level, it would probably be something like the NBA 2K franchise or something like that. But that's always so cheap because you're literally just mimicking real people. Yeah. 2015 should be a more exciting year.
I already want to propose an award for 2015. And it's the one grossest DLC plan.
Is this for you, Bob?
Yes, you can't cheat like that. You can't already get Evolve to win that award. Sorry.
Or you see the Evolve. What was the game you were playing? WWE Immortals?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's that as well.
I think that WWE Immortals to download, and in Android it has in-app purchases. It's $199 to $99.99. I'm wait, what? That's a huge gap for purchases.
I think we should talk about WWE Immortals on the next podcast.
Oh, we have a lot to talk about the next podcast. We were wrong and then right again with Microsoft and the price drop, which was an unpriced drop, which became a price drop.
Probably because in the last 2 weeks, the sales plummeted.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's still a quote unquote special promotion.
Yeah,
and doesn't have an end date.
we also had a Nintendo Direct this week, and I'm sure there's going to be a ton of great things to talk about with the 3DS.
I'm sure Daniel will have a
fuck it.
But yes, it's actually been a very everything's kind of getting back to normal. So a lot of things have been hectic, but we had to get this out of the way. So that's it for 2014. Say goodbye to 2014 and hello to 2015.
Hopefully a better year.
So hopefully a better. I mean, every major game of 2014 was pushed to this year. So hopefully it works out. So for Anthony, Martin, Jason, Daniel, and myself, this has been our 2014 Game of the Year Do Wilden episode. Thank you and have a great year.